In the book of Hebrews this morning, we were reminded that all ecclesias should exhort one another as the day approaches with the coming of our Lord. So we call upon our brother Jeff at this time to give us those words.
Good morning. I have to tilt this thing up, otherwise my Bible slides down. There we go. Patience, perseverance, faith. So if we come into Hebrews 10, our reading that we read this morning, the last section of the book talks about perseverance, confidence, faith. Therefore, brothers, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Christ, by a new and living way opened for us through the curtain, that is his body, and since we have a great high priest over the house of God, let us draw near to God with a sincere heart, full assurance of faith. And so I think about Job, because in our readings coming up in James, it talks about the patience or perseverance, we might term it, of Job, and how we have to be patient. And I think about Jonah, too, because we're reading Jonah. And both Job and Jonah talk about wanting to be dead, and maybe not the most pleasant thought this morning. You might not want to think about being dead. I normally don't think about wanting to be dead. Job talks about wanting to never have been born, which amounts to the same thing. If we come into Job for a minute, that day, verse 4, may it turn to darkness. And what do we think when a baby is born? Joy and light and wonderful. Well, there's a bit of stress too, but there's that feeling of looking down at the child and it's a new life that God has breathed into that being. New life exists and you want to do everything you can to help it, to guide it. And Job wishes that it had never happened. May a cloud settle over it. May blackness overwhelm its light. That night may thick darkness seize it. May it not be included among the days of the year. Don't remember my birth. Imagine the circumstances that Job must have been in and the way he must have felt in order to write these or express these words, that he wished he'd never been born. Indeed, we can hardly imagine ourselves being in the circumstances of Job, having everything and then losing it all, including his own health and respect. His friends came to comfort him, and really Eliphaz in the next chapter says, well, Job, you must have done something wrong because you're suffering. Consider now, who being innocent has ever perished? Were the upright ever destroyed? As I have observed, those who plow evil and those who sow trouble reap it. That's what Eliphaz says in chapter 4, verses 7 and 8. And so both Job and Jonah talk about wanting to be dead or never being born. Jonah, on the other hand, we might think, well, you're getting upset about a plant that grew up over you and it died the next day. And really, is that, you want to be dead? You wish you were dead because of the plant? And yet his real gripe was, God had mercy and grace on Nineveh, who was an enemy of Israel, who he didn't want to be saved. And yet, in God's grace and mercy, he allows each and every person that opportunity and that chance, if they have faith and patience and perseverance in that faith. I would like to go back to Nehemiah, because I've been thinking about Nehemiah, and we have been doing Nehemiah in the readings, and it's an amazing book. And it helps us to consider our own patience and perseverance and faith, and how is our faith real in our lives? We have this picture of a people that's come out of captivity once again to their land, and they begin to build a wall. Now, I already mentioned the verse in James 5. In James 1, verse 3, we know that he talks about trials producing patience. And patience, in this sense, isn't static, right? Because you have trials and you end up being forced into some kind of action. And so then in chapter 5, James is talking, instructs us to be patient like the... What are those people called that work the land? Farmer. Like the farmer, yes. The farmer who works the land. And I think to myself, I have this picture of a farmer. And he's sitting on a chair and waiting patiently for the rains, so that all of his fruits or grains or whatever it is that pops out of the ground for him just pops out of the ground. But it doesn't work that way, does it? I'm not a farmer, obviously. I'm missing a few little terms there about farming. But he had to work hard. He had to put seeds in the ground. He had to work the ground. He doesn't just sit on a chair and wait for the rain. He doesn't just say, well, God will bring the rain and the fruit's just going to come and I'll have lots to eat. That's not how his faith worked. It's not how his patience worked. It was perseverance or patience and faith in action. So it's absurd, right, to think that strawberries are just going to appear where we haven't done any work. It's difficult sometimes to, well, we can think of this situation easily enough, because for us, most of us aren't farmers with big fields, and it's a circumstance we don't find ourselves in, and yet it's easy to say, well, yeah, he had to work hard. And so he had to have patience, and he had to persevere. How many times have we lost our patience with little things in the day? I know I've lost my patience when I think I'm normally a pretty patient guy. We have to confront many different trials in our lives, and it's not just waiting for the rain. Because our fields are spiritual fields that we have to seed with the right seed. God will bring growth, but we must have that seed there. We must welcome the seed into our lives. In reality, the perseverance that's described or the patience, as we read in many versions of Job, is perseverance. And that is action. It's patience with action. And in Nehemiah, we have all the action we could ask for, because we have a people that literally made this journey, similar to what Abraham did when he came out of Ur, and he made this journey over to the promised land. This people had to have some kind of a vision and some kind of faith to say, well, we're going to leave what we know. Okay, it's captivity, but now they leave that and they go into this land. But it was a ruin. It had been burned. It was a waste. And so they immediately, they didn't just get there and we'll just go into this hotel and you know, figure out our plan. They went and there was nothing there. They had to build everything. They didn't have their houses. In fact, they built the wall, and then they said, well, we've got to build ourselves our houses, because they're all crumbled down too. And so bit by bit, they not only had to make their living while they were there, they had to build everything from scratch. And again, circumstances that are so foreign to us. Can't imagine just arriving somewhere, not having somewhere to stay, let alone having to build everything from nothing. So, it talks about rebuilding. And if you look at the first few chapters of Nehemiah and you throw your eyes through there, you can see this term rebuild come up. And obviously it's implied a lot more than it actually occurs as well. Here in chapter 2 of Nehemiah, they haven't even left. Pardon me, Nehemiah hasn't left yet. But he talks about rebuilding in verse 5. And then he inspects Jerusalem's walls in the end of chapter 2 and says to everyone, come, let's rebuild the wall of Jerusalem. Let's start rebuilding, he says in verse 18. And verse 20, again, we are his servants. The God will give us success. Let us start rebuilding. And so they begin to rebuild. And even this term rebuild in and of itself is encouraging for us. Because this people, they came out of captivity. And you might think, okay, well, anyone wants to get out of captivity. You don't want to be in captivity. And the grass is always greener on the other side, so of course they left. But when they got there, they didn't just think, well, maybe we should go back. Maybe captivity was better. No, they didn't think that this time. When they left Egypt, they thought, well, we need to go back to Egypt. But this people didn't say, well, let's go back to captivity. They kept going. They wanted to rebuild in faith and perseverance. If we want to rebuild our faith, our lives in Christ, God will always, always give us the opportunity. Now, there was opportunity for this people to build, but there was also trouble and problems. Opportunity doesn't mean it'll be easy, opportunity, but there's always opportunity. God gives us the same opportunity he gave this people to begin and to construct, to edify. And whichever remnant of his that takes confidence in him, he gives them opportunity. And this is a great comfort for us, I think. Because in whatever part of life we're in, whatever challenge or trial we might be going through, or might have come through, or might be facing, there is never, we should never lose hope. So, the other thing about this is it requires effort, dedication. Building a wall isn't just something you decide to do tomorrow, and you get up and you do it and it's done. It requires vision and effort and organization and perseverance and all of those things, and a continued action, not just something that temporary. Now, the wall itself, of course, was built. It was reconstructed, and it was finished. And then it was done. But not everything was done yet, and I'll get to that in a minute. But it was a process. It wasn't just a temporary thing that they decided to do one day and left the next. Why not temporary? Well, why spend a lot of time on this idea? Well, nothing that's worth doing in faith and in our life in Christ is for temporary. We are, let me put it another way, we are called to be permanent sons and daughters of God. Sons and daughters of the Creator who created everything. Permanent, not just temporary. He doesn't want us for a moment. He wants us forever. That's an awfully long time. He wants us forever. So how much time and effort should we dedicate to him? And I say that thinking about all the things that fill my life. All the things that I think are so important and have to be done and challenges that I have to face when he says, no, cast all your cares upon me. Seek ye first my kingdom. And then these things will be taken care of. Trust in me. Persevere in what you're doing in faith, because I will bring you through it. And so this isn't temporary. We're not temporary sons and daughters of God when we're here or when we're reading our daily readings. We're his sons and daughters every day of every year of every minute of every hour. It's not temporary. And neither is the effort that we need, that we make in our lives. God calls us not to be temporary servants, but his sons and daughters forever. And that's an amazing privilege. Now, let's just look at a couple of the challenges that the people had building the wall in chapter 4 of Nehemiah. In the first few chapters of Nehemiah, we can see a people that's really had a lot of opposition, a lot of problems. They've also worked very hard. They've had a good leader. And here in chapter 4, they have more opposition to the building and talks about Sanballat. And if we come down to verse 7, Actually, verse 6, so we rebuilt the wall till all of it reached half its height, for the people worked with all their heart. They persevered. Verse 7, but when Sanballat, Tobiah, and the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the men of Ashdod heard the repairs to Jerusalem's walls had gone ahead and that the gaps were being closed, they were very angry, and they plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and stir up trouble against it. But we prayed to our God and posted a guard day and night to meet this threat. Okay, so think of being in a foreign land. Well, it's foreign in the sense that you weren't there, but it's actually your home. So you've come back home to your land, and it's destroyed, it's devastated, it's burnt, it's crumbled, there's nothing there. But you're driven and you're motivated to build. You want to put down a good foundation so that you can not just survive, but build a life. And so you can see where this goes spiritually as well. A solid foundation that you can build on. And it's enough to know that, well, okay, you got to have supplies, you got to find people to do the work, you have to have somewhere to live, you have to have something to eat, you have to have somewhere to sleep. And organize all of this effort and the design of building this wall and coordinating all these people together. And then you've got an army coming against you. At this point, the people could have just thought, well, is it really worth rebuilding? Shouldn't we just leave? Shouldn't we just go back? But they didn't. What does Nehemiah say in verse 9? He comments, but we prayed. We prayed to our God and posted a guard day and night to meet this threat. And so then we come down to verse 13 and 14. And it says, therefore I stationed some of the people behind the lowest points of the wall and the exposed places, posting them by families with their swords and spears and bows. And after I looked things over, I stood up and said to the nobles, officials, and rest of the people, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes. And then verse 15, when our enemies heard that we were aware of their plot and God had frustrated it, we all returned to the wall, each one to his own work. So this people didn't just sit back and wait for the rain, so to speak. They set themselves in action. They did something. They had faith. They prayed to God. And they posted a guard as well. So this people believed. They had faith, but it meant perseverance is an active thing. Now, prayer is something that comes up a number of times in the book of Nehemiah. In chapter 1, we see where Nehemiah, well, the character of Nehemiah, I guess, starts off in this first chapter of a man who recognizes who he is before God. And yet also a man of prayer. And this is how the first chapter begins, with his prayer in verse 5 all the way through to the end of the chapter. And in verse 4, his motivation for this prayer is hearing about everyone who had survived the exile and were back in the province and were in great trouble and disgrace, and the wall is broken down and its gates burn fire. Of course, Nehemiah came a bit later. And so when he hears these things, he sits down and weeps and mourns and fasts and prays before God. And so he's very distraught, but he doesn't know what to do. So we think of these people who had just jumped into action with their prayer that God would grant them success. In this case, Nehemiah doesn't know what it is that he needs to do. A lot of times in life, we don't know what we need to do. He's offered his prayer. And in his prayer, he says, I confess the sins we Israelites, including myself and my father's house, have committed against you. And then the king says to him in verse 4 of chapter 2, what is it you want? Why does he ask him what he wants? Because he saw Nehemiah and he was pretty sad, upset, and so he asks him why. Now, Nehemiah could have been in a pretty tricky place here. There's a king who's asking him why he's sad. That's not the tricky part. The tricky part is saying, oh, by the way, I have a homeland and it was conquered and I need it back. I want to build on it because I want to be independent. Now, what is the reaction to independence? I mean, you can think of what's happening in Spain. They're not letting part of their nation go. So they didn't chop off anyone's head, but that's what was at stake here. Nehemiah, his life was on the line. He was very much afraid, he says in verse 2, but I said to the king, may the king live forever. And when the king asks him what he wants, he says, I prayed to the God of heaven. And then I answered the king. And so obviously he didn't just sit down for 10, 20 minutes and offer a prayer to God right in that moment, because he had to respond to the king. But it says he prayed to the God in heaven. Well, he had been praying for days. So all of this is in his mind. He's meditated on the situation. He's realized his own error before God, and he's asked for a saving hand in his life. And Nehemiah is very specific in verse 6 of chapter 1 when he talks about his sins and confessing them. Let your ear be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer your servant is praying before you day and night for your servants, the people of Israel. He's pleading for this people that he knows is under great stress and strain and danger. And when the answer comes, okay, Nehemiah, go. He goes. He's not afraid to go. That might not have been the answer. He might not have even thought that he would be the one to go. But he asks in verse 5, please send me to help this people where I can rebuild. So we have a leader in Nehemiah who is sincere and genuine and motivated and perseveres. Motivated into action by his faith, his conviction in the only God that exists, that is all-powerful, and that actually hears his prayer, and he hears each one of us. And we think about all these physical projects. There's the building of the wall, then the building of the houses. So many building projects, so many physical things, and yet that wasn't what God was looking for in his children. He wasn't looking for things. He wasn't looking for temples and walls. He was looking for what the people would do with their faith. And that's do with their faith. What it meant to follow God. Nehemiah and us. Well, we all have projects. We all have physical things and important things and concerns and problems and trials. And there have to be these things, and we're driven to action, so there will be these things. But there has to be spiritual growth as well, and a real desire for the things of God come out of that. And we haven't had time this morning to look at the whole book, obviously, but in chapter 8 of Nehemiah, as we close, we have a people who's rediscovering, not just rebuilding. Ezra reads the law, and they have really what I would call a Bible school here in chapter 8. They all get together. Remember, they don't have individual Bibles. They can't just go home and read the book of Psalms. They have to come together where the book is and hear it read. So they all have this time together where Ezra reads the law. And it wasn't just Ezra. If we read through this chapter 8, there were the Levites who were helping to understand what it was that they were hearing. So Ezra stood on a platform here in chapter 4, and he opened the book, and all the people were listening. In verse 3, he read it aloud from daybreak till noon. And what about the people? All the people listened attentively to the book of the law. And they gathered so that they could understand. The Levites helped, we see in verse 7. And when they read from the book of the law, their objective wasn't just to read it and so that everyone would hear it. They wanted each person to understand what this meant to them. And so that's what we read in verse 8, making it clear and giving it meaning so that people could understand what was being read. And they had to understand, because if they didn't understand here, they couldn't just go home and read it. They couldn't read out of four different versions. Well, they didn't need different versions. They had the Hebrew, which was the original. They couldn't just go home and grab it and read it and go, oh yeah, I know what this means. They had to understand in this moment, at this time. And so they were driven. And they did understand. How do we know that? Well, when we get down to verse 9, it says, "This day is sacred to the Lord your God. Do not mourn or weep. For all the people have been weeping as they listened to the words of the law." Why were they weeping? Well, because they had understand what they should have been doing, and they weren't doing it. And so what do they do now? Well, Nehemiah said, "Go and enjoy choice food and sweet drinks, and send some to those who have nothing prepared. This day is sacred to our Lord. Do not grieve, for the joy of the Lord is your strength." And isn't that the way that we can persevere in all the trials, problems that we think are big and insurmountable, when we look to the joy of the Lord, that is our strength. To the hope that he's offered us, and place our faith in him that he will pull us through. He looked after people who came back to a land that was destroyed and had nowhere to go and helped them to build. How much more can he help us? And can we help others? The joy of the Lord is your strength. The Levites calmed all the people, saying, "Be still, for this is a sacred day. Do not grieve." Now, he didn't just tell them all the bad things you did. They're okay, you can keep doing them. The people were weeping because they'd realized where they've gone wrong. They'd obviously wanted to change. And there's a transition here. We know this because we can read chapter 9. I encourage you to read chapter 9, where they confess their sins. But this people had to move forward. We also are called to action, to move forward. And we have such a joy in the hope that we have, that we share, that our God has called each one of us to be his sons and daughters permanently, not temporarily. In chapter 9, I'll read you one verse just to finish off. Verse 33. It says, "In all that has happened to us, you have been just. You have acted faithfully while we did wrong." And that's where it starts. That's where it starts with each one of us. With Job, with Jonah. And yet, when we come into Hebrews, in chapter 10, let us draw near to God with a sincere heart in full assurance of faith. We know that we've gone wrong, that we've been on the wrong path, and that God is the only one that's just. But that's not the end. We know that. Because on the other side, there is a light of opportunity for each one of us who places our faith in him. And it's a faith. It's a faith that requires action, because without action, our faith is dead. But this opportunity is there for each one of us. It was there for the people in the time of Nehemiah, and it's there for anyone who in truth and sincerity seeks our God. Let's not let our own concerns and our own way of dealing with them dominate our lives, but recognizing the immensity of God's grace and salvation, his strong arm, which is Christ, extended to us, persevere until the end. Thanks.